Committee on Workforce and Economic Development to order. And our first order of business this morning is a public hearing on House Bill 2246, and I will open that public hearing. I'd like to call up as a panel Dennis Johnson, Oregon Student Assistance, I presume that's commission, and David Lina from the Department of Human Services, if you'd please come forward. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
I am Dennis Johnson, Executive Director of the Student Assistance Commission, and to my right.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is David Lida. I'm the TANF Program Manager with the Department of Human Services, Children, Adults, and Families Division.
Good to have you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, you have before you my remarks, and I would like to just summarize those. It should be fairly straightforward, but even a small program has some complexities. So just to summarize, the statute that we're referring to is 411.894, and we are proposing to amend that to require immediate transfer of Jobs Plus individual education accounts when Jobs Plus participants end their participation in the program. So where the funds now reside with DHS, we would propose to transfer those. Students would activate their accounts with us, and unused funds, individual education accounts that don't get used in the period 5 years after a participant has been in the program, unused funds and interest and any funds that are not needed directly for payment of individual education account expenses for the former participants would go to form a scholarship. This is something we know how to administer. We have more than 300 public and private scholarship programs at the commission, and former participants would be eligible to apply for those. We would make sure that we would continue to do outreach to Jobs Plus former participants, explaining what their benefits are under the program, what else would be available, this scholarship and all of the other funds that we administer, plus other forms of state and federal assistance. It would give us one more way to work with students directly, or students, in this case, people who are going back for retraining, for additional training and education. It would remove one obstacle, potential barrier for students. Now they have to reactivate their accounts with DHS, and much of the money does go unused. We've been engaged in an extensive marketing effort over the past 6 months with our colleagues at DHS, and what we're finding is that we can have only success to a point with getting those funds activated. So funds sitting unused that could be used for scholarships, and removing barriers for students, setting up more direct communication with the potential participants. That's what this is all about. We thank you for your consideration. It's not a tremendously expensive proposal, because it would be a portion of a person's responsibility at the commission to administer this, and we're already doing some of it. This just streamlines it a bit more.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, I'd just like to kind of summarize my testimony as well. You've got a written copy of my testimony in front of you. Most of what Director Johnson all of what he has said is mimicked in my testimony as well. I'm here to speak in support of this bill. It's our belief that this will, that House Bill 2246 will improve the utilization of these individual education account IEA funds by former Jobs Plus clients. And we ask for your support in this bill, and I'm available for any questions.
Questions for our panel. Representative Dahlem.
Two, if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Could you explain for me the funding of Jobs Plus? Where does the money come from now?
Chair Witt, Representative Dahlem. The Jobs Plus program is funded right now through the regular jobs program within DHS. Up until June of 2005, there was also unemployment insurance clients that were also involved in Jobs Plus, but that ended in 2005. And so some of the wages are offset by the temporary assistance for needy families, cash grants, and food stamps that a client would have received if they had been on TANF, but instead those are used to offset the wages paid by the employer in lieu of those grants. And so when a Jobs Plus participant enters the program after 30 days, DHS withholds a dollar of the reimbursement to the employer to fund the individual education accounts.
Oh,
please.
We're not using unemployment funds anymore. That's ended in June. Did I hear that correctly?
Chair Witt, Representative Dahlem, that is correct. The funding for the unemployment insurance portion of the program ended in June of 2005.
Thank you. Then one follow-up, a different question. What happens to the money now that is unused? What happens to it? Where is it booked? Who gets it?
Chair Witt, Representative Dahlem, right now the way that the current statute is set up, the funds are held by DHS, and if they're until the accounts are activated. If the accounts are not activated within 5 years under statute, then we transfer those funds to OSAC to be used for opportunity grants. However, in the past, there's been legislative action as part of our rebalance or reshoot actions to divert those funds to meet general department needs. The last time that occurred was in April of 2005.
How much money will?
That was, I believe, about $2.6 million.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Dahlem asked many of the questions that I was going to pose, but I want to maybe revisit just a little bit. Could you expound a little bit on exactly where the money comes from originally? It seemed like there was a couple of places, and my question basically is, would those funds be used for something else if they weren't used for this? Where does that come from?
Chair Witt, Representative Riley, I believe you're talking about the individual education account mm-hmm. funds, and those are funded from the employer as an offset against our reimbursement of the wages that they pay. And so when a Jobs Plus client is at a Jobs Plus site, the employer pays them a wage, at least minimum wage, but it's the wage that they pay is based on the activity, and it can't be substantially less than the kind of the going rate based on their experience and those kind of things. So the actual IEA accounts are funded from the from the employer as an offset against what we, DHS, reimburses them for the wages that they pay.
Follow up.
Please.
Where does the money come from that creates the reimbursement, the offset? You give the employer some money. Is that correct?
Chair, Representative Riley, that is correct.
Where does that come from?
It comes from two sources. Within the regular jobs budget, within the larger jobs program, picks up some of the costs, as well as the funds diverted from the temporary assistance to needy family grants and their food stamp amounts that would have been paid to the client if they hadn't been in the Jobs Plus program.
So TANF picks up some.
That's correct.
Follow up, please.
Yes.
And currently, that money sits in an account for up to five years if it's not used, and then if you'd repeat where that goes at the end of 5 years, please.
Chair Witt, Representative Riley, by statute, it's supposed to go to OSAC, but in the past, it's been diverted to pick up as part of like rebalances within a Department of Human Services to fund other department needs.
So it's offset general fund dollars.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you,
Representative Holden.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Just to clarify, follow up on Representative Riley's questions. So if I heard you correctly, an employer could be paying minimum wage and actually get reimbursed from these TANF funds. So essentially they would end up paying less than minimum wage to their employees?
Chair Witt, Representative Holvey, no, they're required to pay at least minimum wage. Now, the department also picks up some of their payroll taxes, but they're required to treat the employee with the same rights and benefits as a temporary employee. They're also required to provide a mentor on site that meets with the client and helps them to transition into the world of work. So no less than minimum wage that they're paid. And the average during June was about a little over $8.50 an hour.
Well, Representative Holden.
Hold up. Maybe I didn't ask that correctly. So is it possible that we're reimbursing employers who are paying minimum wage?
Yes.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Representative Dolan.
Generally, on the Jobs Plus program, when an employer takes an employee or a trainee for terms of Jobs Plus in, what is the percentage of follow-on employment? And if I could have some notion of what the wage is after the program's over, two questions here. How many of the employees stay, and what's the average rate of pay after they've been trained in this work?
Chair Witt, Representative Dolan, it runs about 15% of the employers pick up the Jobs Plus employee. I don't have the average wage at placement after the employment. We'll try to get that figure to you. About two-thirds of the clients that go through the Jobs Plus program are find unsubsidized employment. And the majority of the, about 83% we looked at the people that left Jobs Plus between July of 2005 and June of 2006, and about 83% of them are no longer receiving TANF as of the end of January. So it's very successful.
Further questions? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize if I'm asking a question that you answered in your direct testimony because I've arrived late. But I think it's clear from the Corrections Committee's asking so far that we want to understand the general parameters of this program better than we do based purely on the testimony involved with this bill. Perhaps you could give us a little bit more background as in which people tend to qualify for this kind of a program, what the purpose of the program is generally. And let me just say that as a prelude to that so you understand the question, my understanding of this program is that it's intended to help people who may have a great difficulty dealing with the most basic skills involved in work, such as getting to work on time, knowing how to interact with the people at work, understanding how to deal with a boss, dealing with the basic skills that any job has. If I'm wrong, I'd like to know that, but I think that's basically what we're talking about. And the hope is that when people complete this program, you should also tell us how long people are allowed, that they will have gained those basic skills, perhaps some other job skills as well, and that the hope of this program, finally getting down to 2246, is that those people, having achieved those basic job skills, will get on to more education so they can do better. Is my summary reasonable, and can you answer the question embedded in that statement?
Thank you very much, Representative Barnhart. A critically important question.
Chair Witt, Representative Barnhart. Yes, what your understanding of the program is correct. The Jobs Plus program is intended for those TANF recipients that would otherwise not be able to gain successful unsubsidized employment. Clients that can't get a unsubsidized employment through our job search or other program area trainings can be referred to this particular program. On average, a little over 100 clients are in the program at a given time. In 2005-2006, a little under 400 unduplicated clients were served in the program. So it's relatively small compared to the little under 11,000 on average clients that are in the regular jobs program. Within the Jobs Plus program, someone can be in that particular program for up to 6 months. After 4 months, the employer is required to release the client for 8 hours a week, and that's paid time to seek other employment unless they intend to hire on the participant. Within the program, I think I mentioned that they're treated like a temporary employee with the same rights and as a temporary employee, and they have an on-site mentor that helps them work through kind of those issues that you were talking about kind of what's expected of them in the world of work, kind of those soft skills about, you know, showing up on time, calling in if you're sick, how to interact, dress appropriately, and those kind of things.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Yes, Representative Jerome.
I'd like just to follow up, and to me this bill's still a little bit muddy as far as the meaning of it goes. Maybe the rest of the committee here fully understands this. But the amount that I'm looking for is what is when the transfer from DHS on these accounts that are over 5 years old, the accounts that are over 5 years old goes to to the Jobs Plus program. How much per year are we looking at that would actually cost DHS to do this?
Chair Witt, Representative Garrod, really it's budget neutral, if you will, because those funds are typically supposed to be transferred to OSAC anyway, unless there's some other legislative action. Right now, there's about $2.7 million in the account. About $1.5 million of that would be available for the Jobs Plus program because it's at 5 years old. And so, you know, DHS is in support of this bill because we think it'll improve the utilization of those training funds as they were intended.
But, please. You say DHS is in favor of this bill?
Okay. Gentlemen, I'm interested in knowing if you're aware of anyone or group that opposes this bill. The mere mention of the words Jobs Plus in this building has been known to cause children to scream, spawn tornadoes, created the nuclear fallout, and has also made people's hair fall out. In fact, Representative Dahlem, as a younger man, was known to have uttered the words Jobs Plus. And
you're in trouble.
and with that, knowing that this is the equivalent of a third rail, is there anyone that you're aware of that is opposed to this particular Jobs Plus bill?
Mr. Chair, no one has come forward with the Student Assistance Commission. We haven't had anyone objecting to it once the explanation is clear, and that is that these funds are sitting unused right now. Sooner or later, they will get transferred either back to the general fund to help with some other expense, or they will be transferred to the Commission for the Opportunity Grant Program. Now, the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program is, of course, the largest of our programs, but when funding for that program is in the tens of millions of dollars, a transfer, the last one, I think, was perhaps about $320,000. That's small in that scale, but it can be very impactful for this kind of student. One of the things that we've been seeing with the Jobs Plus program in recent years is that we're no longer serving some of those former participants who came to the program from employment. So the period of time that they're in the Jobs Plus program now is much shorter than it was before. They don't accumulate as much in their individual education accounts, and those amounts are thus less potentially valuable for them. It's measured in the hundreds of dollars rather than in the thousands of dollars, and that doesn't go very far with today's education expenses. These amounts do help with some licensing, some credentialing, some incidental expenses, but they're not going to go very far paying tuition and fees at any of our community colleges or universities. So this creating a scholarship fund from the funds that do sit there now unused, accumulating, and are kind of potentially usable for other things. You know, these funds are potentially available to help students a little more directly. As I mentioned earlier, we know how to do this with scholarships. We can get recipients who are appropriate and help them. And a few hundred thousand dollars can go a long way spread around a number of recipients. So no objection from our end. I should let DHS speak to, and my colleague Dave Lava speak to their end, what they have heard.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, DHS, is, like I said, is also supportive of this bill. I think there's been some other proposals, although I don't think any of them have made it to actual legislation or proposed legislation around a different utilization of the expired IEA accounts for, I believe, for possible utilization for other training programs. Although, you know, we're not in support of that. We support this utilization of the bill.
Thank you. Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for some clarification for the chair, I hope. It's my understanding that there are actually two Jobs Plus programs, one run by DHS, one run by the Employment Department. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And the one run by Employment is no longer, the funding ended in 2005.
Right. And may I follow up?
Please.
And having been on the Economic Development Committee last session, I happen to know that that's the Jobs Plus program which causes such consternation, and not this program.
Thank you for that clarification, Vice Chair Riley. That's exactly the point that I was hoping to have made. Any further questions? Yes, Representative Gerard.
I have a question for the chair, please. If I support this measure, does that mean my hair is going to fall out?
Representative Gerard, you're going to have to speak with Representative Dahlem here. So it's a little sidebar. So.
The abuse I suffer. I can feel little fuzzies growing in. This must be a better bill.
For those of you who weren't on the Economic Development Committee last session, Chair Lim has trouble with the name Dahlem, and he was known as Representative Dahlem.
Gloom and doom.
Gloom and doom, Dahlem, that's right.
With that, gentlemen, thank you very much for your testimony, and certainly appreciate all the clarifications that you made for the committee today.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on House Bill 2246 today? I'm not going to hold a work session on this today. I'm going to give an opportunity for those who testified, if you feel that it would be helpful at all, to add any additional information before we hold a work session, an opportunity to do that. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2246 and open a hearing on House Bill 2253. Barry, did we have anybody signed up for testimony on this today? I expect probably not. Okay, thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill, I just lost my number here, 2253, and open a work session on the same bill. Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2253 be referred to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Bill 2253 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Yes.
And then may I speak to that?
Please do.
Thank you. as I reviewed this bill and referred back to the testimony on the bill, it looks to me as though this is a very standard kind of authority that the commissioner is asking for. It will make his job easier in those kind of circumstances, as he referred to in his testimony when we had the hearing on the bill last time, and make it a bit more certain that he will be able to deal with noncompliance from people who are actually still in the state at the time that the subpoenas are served. When you're dealing with certain sets of scoff laws, the only way you can deal with them is to have an enforceable subpoena, and a subpoena which requires them to bring their records, the subpoena ducis tecum that was referred to last time. And this bill does that. And it refers us, you'll note, to the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure 55D, which is the standard procedure for the enforcement of these kinds of rules through the courts. So that we can actually use the power of the circuit court to enforce these subpoenas. I think this is authority which the commissioner should have had right along. Shouldn't have been any question about it. And it's absolutely essential. And I think the case he described to us makes it very clear why it's essential. The case of the person from out of state violating Oregon's initiative law and then leaving the state to avoid, well, obviously to move on to their, with continuing with their business, but among other things, leaving the state to avoid dealing with this issue. So I'm a yes vote on this motion.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Representative Dahlem.
Perhaps if I could ask Representative Barnhart a question. I did, and I don't know how to dig this information out any other way, but other agencies in the state have this authority. Representative Barnhart, do you have any notion of what agencies those are? And I probably should have asked this in public testimony.
That was brought out in the previous testimony, and the commissioner is in the audience. If you
and we could ask him.
We're on work session.
If you'd still ask him.
If we could have administrator please answer this question, Ellen.
Thank you, Chair Witt, Representative Dahlem. The testimony was that the Oregon Liquor Control Board, the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Justice all have this investigative subpoena authority. Oh, and the Department of Human Services as well.
Does the Bureau have any additional agencies that to add to that list? Could you come forward, please?
And Mr. Chair, while she's coming, I might just note that the ones that have already been noted are ones that have needs for investigations within the scope of the department's work that are very similar to the issue that we heard described here during the public testimony.
Thank you. Do I need to close the...
No.
I don't think so, because we have a direct question, right?
Right.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Marsha Ole Miller, I'm the Legal Policy Advisor with the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. And I actually did a word search of the ORS to find other agencies that had direct ability to go to court to enforce their investigative subpoenas, and I came up actually with a lot more agencies that I wasn't yet aware of, one being the Secretary of State, and the wording of their statute is quite straightforward. And in fact, our bill contains wording with some safeguards for the party that's being subpoenaed to actually question that within our agency. It requires us to promulgate rules within which a party could question what we wanted and before going on to the court process. So we have some additional protections. So the Secretary of State would be one agency, and that's in several different regards, different programs that they have. The Real Estate Commissioner has similar authority, the Employment Relations Board, the Oregon State Bar, some smaller agencies, well, this isn't. The Department of Consumer and Business Services has it in several of their programs, as well as the Civil Service Commission, the Arbitrators of Public Employee Collective Bargaining Agreements, the Public Utility Commission, the Oregon Board of Dentistry, the Oregon Racing Commission, the Employment Department, and the State Fire Marshal, in addition to some that I believe have already been mentioned here this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate that additional information.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments from the committee? Yes, Representative Gerard.
I'm going to be a no vote, and the reason I'm going to be a no vote is the same reason that Representative Barnhart said he's going to be a yes vote, and that was the example that was given as to why he wanted this authority. This the Labor Commissioner is an elected official, and I really think that when you use an example of how the election process was interfered with, it gives me grave concern. And I think if he'd used a different example, my vote would be different. But I'm going to vote no.
Thank you, Representative Gerard. On the motion, Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Yes.
Representative Dowd.
Yes.
Representative Drott.
No.
Representative Holby.
He's excused.
Vice Chair Lynn.
Excused.
Vice Chair Riley.
Yes.
Chair Witt.
Yes. House Bill 2253, having received a majority, is moved to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation. Thank you very much. Is there any other business to come before our committee today,
Harry?
Oh, excuse me. Thank you, Representative Barnhart. I missed that one. The chair assigns himself to be the carrier of that bill. With that, seeing and hearing no further business, we are adjourned until Wednesday. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, sir.
I didn't want to carry it, but anybody.